Colleagues, friends, good morning. After what has been said by Robert Zolik and Helen Clark and others, Angel Guri, I can afford to be very brief. But let me begin by thanking you, Pascal, for bringing us together again. As Angel said, the presence of so many of us here this morning is testimony of the esteem we have for you, also for the work you are doing. Now, let me make a few brief remarks as to what has been happening in Africa and what I think we can do, we should do, to ensure that Africa can continue making progress. At the beginning of this crisis, there was an optimistic, some would say a naive view, that somehow Africa was not to be affected. The reality is the crisis came sooner, deeper, and may last longer. The principal vehicle of transmission of the crisis to the real economy of Africa has been the trade channel, or shall I say, the commodities channel. To a lesser extent, the other sources of external inflows, and almost everywhere the capacity to react, to resist. It is therefore not surprising that the economies most dependent on one or two commodities have suffered the most, and there is a renewed search across Africa on how to avoid this problem of being a permanent victim of commodities booms and busts and looking for new trade opportunities. I think the second main feature of the impact of the slowdown on African economies, I think not sufficiently mentioned but very relevant, is what has happened to some of the large regional engines of trade on the continent, the large economies, and then the effects on the entire neighborhood. The example could be South Africa and Lesotho. Now, if you look at the numbers, people would say the African growth will be cut to 3%. That is an average. But the reality is much more complicated. About a dozen countries are still holding out and growing at about 5%. And the reason is these are better diversified and have got strong reform credentials. Another dozen or so are exposed via different channels, and they are showing some surprising resilience and holding around 3%. But we have a group of countries, about 26 in total, who are causing us a lot of concerns. Now, what I would like to say here is that the reason aid for trade is more critical for us now at any point in time is that we are of the view that in the same ways we have been affected faster, the recovery of the African continent will be slower once the world economy has recovered. But we are keen that whenever that recovery comes up, we're able to participate in the growth opportunities which come about. 3 weeks ago, I was in Namibia at the invitation of the president of the country. And I flew north to the city of the town of Oshakati, at the Angolan border. At this place, you can almost buy anything, from utility vehicles to household equipment and consumer goods. These are traders defying all kinds of odds to import goods from everywhere around the world, and the trade is going on. And I was trying to think, how can we help Angola and Namibia to get this trade better organized? And I committed to do so on my return. But also in this same part of Namibia, I was visiting a railway which we are trying to support. Now, I say this, Pascal, because each time we have discussed about regional trade, trade-related infrastructure, we have, I think, concentrated too much on roads. Roads are a problem. I think as you heard in Lusaka, many heads of state now are thinking about the issue of railways and port capabilities. And so we are launching at the bank an initiative building on orders done by the World Bank in Accord to look at Africa's port capabilities, to look at the delays, to look at what can be done to ensure that over time, we're able to optimize the utilization of port capacities existing at this time. Now, let me also say that since we met in Dar es Salaam, I think a lot of progress has been made in mainstreaming trade in national plans. One example, the number of countries who have now allowed border opening for 24 hours. In the past, many of these delays at the borders were caused by frequent closures at the border. Now many countries are accepting to open the border for 24 hours. In the case of the bank, thanks to an increase in our soft resources for regional integration, we have, like the World Bank, increased almost threefold our support regional programs, mainly trade-related infrastructure, building capacities of regional economic organizations, and also some other relevant regional public goods. But we have also drawn some lessons, and I would like to mention one at some length, but I think it is relevant to what we are doing. International aid allocation is essentially national allocation, but also it is performance-based allocation. There is a view, which I think is misleading, that regional programs provide a large possibility of free riding, and this constrains the capacity of countries and ourselves to increase our support for regional programs. And I think it's creating an unnecessary competition between national resources and regional resources. I think if we succeed, it might be useful at this point in time to try to imagine how we can have regional operations which at the same time deal with the issue of free riding, if there is one, so that we can leverage the strengths of national increased productivity and regional operations. In the case of the African Development Bank, we commit about 20% of our resources to regional programs. That is absolutely not enough. I think the World Bank maybe does a bit more, but I would like to be able to be in a position to do more for regional programs, because I think they support also the national programs. But there is a view that if you do more regional programs, poor performing countries will relied on countries who are doing better. I think this is a problem we should deal with, we can deal with, at the same time be able to do more on regional level. Let me mention another lesson which I think we have learned. That is the capacity of regional economic organizations. I am persuaded that the best way to build the capacity of these institutions is not to bypass them. It is to work with them and build the capacity over time, because there is no other alternative to those organizations. We have been doing a lot of work on corridor development in Africa. A 250-kilometer highway in the East African community, which you commissioned some months back, a major portion of the Trans-Africa Highway between Nigeria and Cameroon, and another $250 million program on the Nacala Corridor between Zambia, Malawi, and Mozambique. On all of these programs, what is clear, though, is that we need stronger regional ownership of these programs, and that can only come about by increasing collaboration between the regional economic communities. Now, we had a meeting with all of them in Tunis, and I'm satisfied that we're going in the right direction. Let me mention another point, and then I'll try to stop there. During the years of adjustment, Dominic, many services critical to trade on the continent were privatized, and I define particular to railways. Many of them were given to concessions. It has not worked. I can remember probably only one among all the railways which have been concessioned which is a success. I think time has come to examine that, because these are the mode of transport which ideal for bulky, low-value goods, which my continent is producing a lot of these days, minerals, but the railways, many countries, are a complete shamble. And I hope that we can, with the World Bank and other institutions, again look at this issue of railway concessioning, because I think it is a big impediment on the performance of trade on the continent. This crisis, which has hit sectors which are strongly dependent on international demand, has spurred some kind of strategic rethinking on my continent. And this is the following. If you look at the history of Africa for the last 35 years, you could almost look at the fortunes depending on the cycle of commodities. This one has not been different. We would like, after this crisis is over, to try to look at the new opportunities which are emerging on the continent itself. Many people forget that over the last decade, if the continent of Africa registered good growth, it was, yes, partly because of commodities, but also because of increased regional trade, both recorded and unrecorded. And here's another piece of work we should do together, Pascal, on the level of unrecorded trade on the continent, which I think is enormous. Now, I want to refer to the issue of trade finance, which Bob Zolik and Pascal, you mentioned. At the beginning of the crisis, we were of the view that we are a development institution, yes, of course we are a development institution, and that our role is long-term project finance. The trade finance was not our mission. But as the crisis worked itself out, and with listening to commercial banks, it became clear it was an emergency. And so we have joined you, Pascal. The African Development Bank will be putting in place a $1 billion facility, which my body has already approved. And we shall proceed on a dual track in the following way. We are joining the International Finance Corporation in a pool, the GTLP, in which we are putting $500 million, and I'm glad you can stand that today. And we would like to see this take off quickly, because I think the countries, the banks, need the money. At the same time, we'll be putting the $500 million to the disposal of African financial institutions, sub-regional organizations, and we'll learn as we go. My own inclination is that once the crisis is over, we shall then determine what is our role in the long-term trade finance. It might be that we have got a longer-term role. It might be that once the crisis is over, we can leave this to other institutions and then continue our mission, which is long-term project finance. Let me end by saying this. I've been asked several times, as you know, there was an African delegation at the G20 in London, but what did you bring back? My answer is, we brought back a lot of success. The IMF was given a lot of resources, and I want to thank Mr. Strauss-Kahn for the flexibilities he has indeed shown recently in response to many countries who have difficulties. I also want to thank many donors here who have allowed us to increase our level of budget support operations as the fund increases the balance of payment support. But it is clear, it is very clear, the next G20 must look again closely at the issues of low-income countries. They will not go away. They will not go away. And I think we need to implement what was decided in London, but at the same time look again at what low-income countries are doing to build up their potential and their capacity for resistance. I am very optimistic about Africa, though. I think if this crisis had come 20 years ago, the continent would have been in greater difficulties. But the reforms over the last 15 years have produced a continent which is much more resilient, able to resist these external shocks. And I'm also impressed. Someone was mentioning how rich countries have been putting barriers, financial barriers, or other forms of barriers. African countries have not. On the contrary, throughout this crisis, they have been actually accelerating reforms related to trade, and I want to commend them for that. So thank you very much, and I look forward to discussions for today and tomorrow. Thank you.